This is one of the Talmidei HaRashba, and he wrote on the Parshiyos of the Torah a series of drushas, which probably he gave to his constituency, if you will, to his olam. And that drusha on Parshas Baaloischa connects to the statement in Pirkei Avos, Hakina v'hataiva v'hakavod mitzien es ha'odom min ha'olam. And as I mentioned to you, when the Goyin speaks about the koyach ha'ta'avoni and the koyach ha'ka'asoni, we have to understand that there are certain basic instincts that HaKadosh Baruch Hu planted inside of the person. Now, you know that when they found double helix, the chromosomes, and that they found that there's a lot of chatter. They found genes, but in between the significant, you know, material that's conveying information, that is the secret of how a person develops, and everything develops, really, plant, animal, and human, they found a lot of stuff that seems to be static, nonsense, chaff. Of course, we're just beginning, and nobody knows what that's all for. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts koichus into a bria, there has to be a purpose for it. In the kina, taiva, kavod departments, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not create a person that he should be with a built-in challenge which is almost overwhelming for no reason. There has to therefore be positive qualities to these midos. So the question is, exactly what are those positive qualities? What is kina, taiva, and kavod in the positive sense? So this is what these drushas are trying to say. And he says, there is a possibility to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam with these very midos. And that's what they're there for. This statement is not as simple as it at first appears. In other words, the negative is not merely a Yetzaharadik, a challenge that thwarts us and challenges us to do better. They're actually destructive elements that ruin, they debilitate the person, and they waste him. Very much like a machlam am'eris wastes the body, this wastes the soul and the personality of the person. Kina, taiva, and kavod. For who? Now, the very first thing, kina soifrim tar bechachma. Kina. Interesting, I want to add that the Maharsha says that kina soifrim is not the ultimate madrega. He feels that kina of any kind is not the highest madrega in Avodas Hashem, because a person should be Ovid Hashem independent and irrespective of anybody else's Avodas Hashem. I would like to add something to that. Kina means that you would really want to be better than the other person. Now take, for example, Rabbi Kahn. So Rabbi Kahn is a half-decent Rav. And there are other Rabbanim in the neighborhood, in the city, in the country, and in the world. What is the benefit to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Where is it better? If those Rabbanim are better than me, or they're not as good as me? Now, think about it for a minute. I am what I am. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has so many generals, so to speak, in his army. So I am what I am. If the other person's better, he has me, and he also has better. If the others are worse, then I am what I am. But he has less. So if a person's really interested in the Eibishter, if he wants the war to be successful, if he wants the army to be superlative, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if that's my agenda, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should be Matzliach Kivayochel, then I want that everybody should be better than me, which is the exact opposite of Kina. So Kina might be a vehicle to prod the person to greater heights. But the price that's being paid, and this I think is what the Marsha is driving at, the price that's being paid is because no matter how much a person benefits from that jealousy, inevitably the jealousy wants to define the other as less than you. Because that's the whole point. I don't want him to have that reputation. I don't want him to be regarded as the biggest tzaddik, the greatest saint in the world. I want that I should be regarded that way.
So how do you define kina?
Kina is a jealousy. Just plain vanilla jealousy. But what Rav Yehoshua ibn Shu'aib is saying, the Talmud of the Rajba is saying, is that there's a positive factor to jealousy, and that's the statement of the Gemara, kina sofrim tayber chokhma. That the sofrim means scribes, but it means talmid chachamim. Kina sofrim tarba chokhma. It actually increases wisdom, because that kind of jealousy wants, I want to get the 100. I want to get the gold star on the page, on the chart, where the teacher is putting up gold stars. I want to have more gold stars than anybody else. But you can't, student of the month, but you can't be student of the month unless you excel. So this prods you to excel. But the same kina, says the Marsha, is still a negative quality. And it's not the ultimate quality. So what is the ultimate quality? I want to do my best because I want to serve Hashem. I want everyone else to do even better, because then Hashem has a better general staff. So this is what, but this is what he's saying. And he says, Zehu ma'amorim zal kina sofrim tarba chokhma, on the fifth line. V'zehu ma'amor shloimai al tekane libcha b'chatoyim ki im b'yiris Hashem kol hayoyim. In other words, Kloimar, al tachmeid utekane oisher umala sachatoyim. Don't be jealous of people who have money. El tekane biyareim ubachasidim ulechas b'dak Hashem. You should be jealous of people who serve God, who serve the Ribbono Shel Olam, because that's something worth being jealous about. So if he planted in us this instinct of jealousy, it has to be for a value and a purpose as well as a negative. So it depends how you use it. So that's what he says. Shlomo HaMelech says in this pasuk, "Ki im b'yiras Hashem kol hayom," goes on kina. You could be mekane those who are yorei Hashem kol hayom. I remember once I was standing next to a fellow, and we were observing a tremendous tzaddik. I'm not going to mention his name; he's no longer with us, but a tremendous, tremendous tzaddik. And we were watching how he was saying Asher Yotzar. That's all. He was saying Asher Yotzar. And the fellow next to me says, "I hate him." I hate him. So I looked at him and I said, "What?" He says, "How could you be such a tzaddik? I'm trying so hard and I can't even go near this man. I hate him." It's like maybe the ultimate compliment, but that's the point that the Marsha is trying to say. It's not shayach that the kina doesn't seep in somehow as a negative element. And it's not, he says, the ultimate madrega of Talmidei Chachamim. But this is what he says. He says that nevertheless Chazal say kina soifrim tarba chokhma. The gam kein lekina lekanez bereshoyim b'chatoyim liyasrum aloichiyach mashikosav ki kinesi b'hololim kano kinesi b'kanoz kinosi k'moshabo b'inyan pinchas ve'liyo. Here we have something that I thought about when I read this for the first time. I thought about it mamish for an hour. I couldn't understand what he wants over here. And I realized that he made a leap because of the word itself, which requires a great deal of analysis. You know what he's saying here? We have the word kina, and we have the word kanoos. They both have exactly the same shorish, kuf nun aleph. What is the relationship between jealousy with a J and zealotry with a Z? That's really what he's doing. He's conflating the two inyonim as one. And he's saying the koyach of kina is the source of kanos. And just like kina, kina sofrim tarba chokhma is a positive element, so too, kanos, when used properly, is a positive element. Because look what he says. He says, Kloimar, Al tachmud unekanei oisho umalas achatoyim, el tekanei biyireim achasidim aleches bedarkei Hashem. That's okay. That's the jealousy. You have to be jealous of people who are better than you, that you want to be as good as they are. But what's the next line? The next line says, Zuhi yiras Hashem, ubo mitzvah lehizkanois. Began kein, lekanois berishoyim b'chatoyim liyasrim aloichiyach. Here he's not using the word lekanois to be jealous of, because of course you're not supposed to be jealous of them. He already said that. Don't be jealous of what is there to be jealous of? Their success, their power, their authority, their riches, whatever. So he already said that you're not allowed to be jealous of that. And that's the negative. That's Hakina Taiva Kovin Matsina Sa Adam in Olam. So what is he telling me now? He doesn't mean that. He means kanos. Liyasram ulochiach, to give them musr and to criticize them. Kamoshikosov kikinesi baholim. Kano kinesi, bekano es kinosi, kmoshebo beinyan Pinchas ve'Eliyahu. You have Pinchas, of course, the pasuk says in the parasha, bekano es kinosi, v'lechilisi es bnei Yisrael bekinosi. And you have it by Eliyahu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks Eliyahu, what's doing with you? Malach HaPoy Eliyahu? And Eliyahu says, kano kinesi l'Hashem elokei tzvakos. I was zealous on behalf of the Kvod Shamayim. I want to understand, Einochanami, it's the same Isiyas, and Einochanami, the word sounds very similar, Kino and Kanoos, but what exactly is the common denominator? What exactly is the Tzad HaShavet? So I was thinking, when you speak about Kino and Kanoos, there's first one Yesod is there front and center. And maybe there's more to it, but at the very least, this what binds them together. I have a responsibility to the Ribbono Shel Olam. I also have eyes and ears. Chazal tell us, Eino v'libo treisir suri da'aveira. You know, we have antenna. We have a radar system that's constantly circling, you know, like the picture of the radar. Going around and around and around. We pick up information and we notice things. Most of the time we would better off not noticing these things. And they cause reactions within us. They cause reactions within us. In the inyan of taiva, it's also like that. Because if a person's eyes see what they're not supposed to see, but it goes far beyond desire. Far beyond desire. For example, a person is married, and he's relatively happily married, and he is married to a woman who has, Baruch Hashem, given him many children, and from those children there are grandchildren, and she is already of a different shape, you should forgive me, than she was when she got married. And all of that is with a tremendous mesiras nefesh for bearing children and for being a wife and a mother for many decades. Now you have this very young girl that has not gone through those parshios and is much younger to begin with. And this person sees this girl. Now what is going on in his mind is much more complicated than the simple raw instinct of human nature. Because inevitably, by taking that into account, in his sense of where he is in the world, there is a devaluation of his wife. It's the truth. Because you see the two pictures right next to one another. Now, if a person is the smallest Baal Madrega, of course, it doesn't affect him. But the Nisayon and the possibility of that is always there. That's the Metzias HaDvarim. Now, to be aware of an environment is always potentially full of sakon. Now, when it comes to kanos, there also is an incredible awareness that is processing inside the person. When it comes to kina, there's a tremendous awareness that's processing inside the person. You have to make a cheshbon of comparison. That's my point. Kinna can never happen until you have two sides, two pictures right next to one another. Just like the gross example that I gave you a moment ago, it could be a very sophisticated thing, but it has to be with the comparison. If no one gets 100, you know, they have that. They have the... No one gets 100. So then your 90 is 100. If you're allowed to get 100, then your 90 is 10 points less than 100. But none of that would mean anything unless somebody actually got 100. If no one got 100, the fact that 100 is the ultimate means nothing for the person who has kinna, because I still ended up as good or on top of everybody else. It's always comparison. You're always looking, what did the other one do? Now, in an ideal matzav, just like in the gross example, you know who said that really ultimately? The Chafetz Chaim said, Sameach to Samach, right? The bracha that we say under the chuppah and by Sheva brachas, Reyim Ahuvim, Kesameichacha Yitzircha began Eden Mikedem. What was the maila of Yitzircha, your creation, began Eden Mikedem? Nobody else. There's no comparison. There's nothing to compare to. And this really is the yesod of kanos as well. The difference between a kanoi and not a kanoi is in two inyonim. First of all, does it really matter? But secondly, do you see? And very often, those are totally zebazeh. Kanos is the critical awareness of a horrible disparity. It is the debasing of Kvod Shamayim when Kvod Shamayim needs to be elevated. In other words, the Yesod of Chilul Hashem Be'etzem is the absurdity of acting a certain way in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's why only this particular inyan has that sliding scale of who you are. In, you know, in mitzvahs, all right, there are certain inyonim, you know, that are only for yechidei skula, certain inyonim that if an average person does it, it's a gaiva, it's a, you know, and then Chazal say you shouldn't do it because, you know, etc. But positive things, I mean, that you shouldn't do because it's mechzeki yuara. But I'm talking about a mitzvah that its essence is a sliding scale. Because if a simple person or an ignorant person or a person who does not have those religious sensibilities to begin with, and you know that, does something inappropriate in Avodas Hashem, which challenges his whole fealty to the Ribbono Shel Olam, you don't pay any attention to it. So it doesn't cause the level of Chilul Hashem, because people do not see the discrepancy, because they have no expectations of this person. You know, if a person is a Rasha, what do I expect that he should do? Rishus. So it doesn't seem that he's in any way contradicting the whole binyan that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made in the world. But when you see someone who's purported to be a tzaddik, a righteous individual, and he's acting in a very inappropriate manner, the whole structure falls apart because you expect A and you're getting B. And this falls into the category of Chilul Hashem, because ultimately the reputation of Kedusha and Tara and what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has his general all of a sudden proves to be a bum. This is different than the private is a bum. It's very simple. And especially since the measure of the general is not to be a bum. That's the point. Not to win wars, but not to be a bum. To be a noble person, an elevated person, a person with higher standards, a person who can conquer his Yetzer Hara. And here all of a sudden you see that he's succumbing to it, and it means nothing to him. That's why most Chilul Hashem levels, the extreme levels of Chilul Hashem, are only with great people. The heads of communities, the leaders of their tribes, etc., etc. Now, it's also true, interestingly enough, that most Chilul Hashem comes from Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. You know why? Even though the Maisa with Pinchas was not really Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. And the Maisa of Eliyahu was not Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. It was with Avoy Dezara. But the ultimate, really the ultimate Chilul Hashem is Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. And how do I know this? My instinct tells me so. But there's a Gemara Mefereshes at the end of Maseches Yuma that says it explicitly. Heichi dami chil Hashem. So when you heichi dami chil Hashem, have an example of Pinchas, have an example of Leo. The Teretz is, and I'll explain to you why. Avram Avinu, I've said this many, many times. Avram Avinu sent Lot away, and there seems to be a machlokus in the Medrash, where the Medrash says that Hashem appeared to Lot, to Avram, excuse me, after he sent Lot away. Right? Acharei he pared Lot me'imo. And the Medrash says, one opinion, that Hashem says, why did it take you so long? I was waiting for you to get rid of him. The other Medrash says, why did you get rid of him? You're nice to everybody. Why did you get rid of him? And it was a criticism. On the tzad that says, why did you get rid of him? I understand that very well. Lot is his nephew. He went with him through thick and thin. If Avram can daven for Sodom, he can daven for Lot. Doesn't have to chase him away. What about the other side? What did Lot do that was so bad that he has to say, get away from me. You go to the right, I go to the left. You go to the... What? What did he do? What did he do? Avodah Zarah?
The shepherds.
Lot worshipped Avodah Zarah.
He should have grabbed a finger.
Lot did not tell his shepherds to muzzle their animals when they went towards other fields. So they allowed their animals to graze in fields that did not belong to them. That was the crime. It doesn't say even that Lot led those animals, or that he instructed them to graze in other fields. He just didn't stop them. And Lot had a cheshbon. It wasn't a valid excuse. But he had an excuse. He had an explanation. He says, Hashem promised all these lands to my uncle, and I'm his only heir because he has no children. And Mimela, I'm just taking it a little bit earlier it's a little bit earlier. So now the question is, having said all of that, is that a reason to send somebody away? And look what happened to him. He ended up in stone. Vayehal ad stone. In other words, leaving Avram is a very dangerous thing to do, because all of that morality and all of that greatness, and you're leaving that, and you're going into a very, very crazy world. Why does Avram chase his nephew away when the consequences are that he ends up in Sodom? So you know what the answer is. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is so happy, according to that Man D'Omer, that he did it already. And he should have done it earlier. And Hashem didn't appear to him until he was gone. The answer is, and this is an incredibly important point, for us, I'm not so much interested in Lot, for us, Avram used to go to everybody he could get his hands on. And he would teach them, there's such a thing as one God. One God. And this one God is the master of the entire universe and determines our destinies as well. And that's the only God that you have to worship. Therefore, you have to smash your idols and give up all the stars and the moons and the suns that you worship now. And he was making tremendous inroads. He was really very successful. Some of them he worked, as the Rambam says, the beginning of Hilchos Avodah Zarah, with great philosophical principles, those people who are sophisticated. And the people who were simple, he used to tell them, you know, come in, have a meal, and then he would tell them to thank God. Bench. And they would say, what is this bench business? So he says, well, you don't want a bench? He said, no. So then pay me for the meal. They said, what? He says, well, it's like this. If it's mine, I want you to pay for it. If it comes from God, you've got to thank him. But one way or the other, he used to make tremendous, tremendous inroads. And then he would start preaching to them and tell them, listen, now that you believe there's a God and he's the master of the universe and it's only one, so you have to change your way of life. It's not just something you feel in your heart or think in your head. It has to make a difference in your day to day. So they asked him, like, how so, Avram? So he said to them, you know how so? Honesty, integrity. And Avram Avinu told them a maisa from the Chofetz Chaim. You understand? He said the Chofetz Chaim was going once with his driver, and they passed an apple orchard, and all of a sudden the driver pulls the reins of the horse and stops, and he climbs over the fence into an apple orchard, obviously that does not belong to him, and starts pulling apples off the tree. He saw there was nobody around for miles and miles, so he took advantage. He gets back with, you know, he's about to, to the next tree, and he's about to pluck some more apples, and all of a sudden he hears from a distance the Chafetz Chaim screaming, he's watching, and he drops all the apples, and he runs back into the wagon, and he scampers off with his horse and buggy, and then he says, Chafetz Chaim, you have the eyes of an eagle. I didn't see anyone. So the Chafetz Chaim said, he's always watching. So that's the story that Avraham Avinu used to tell the people. And it said, if you believe in a God, Hashem, then you have to believe that He's always watching, and you have to be honest anyhow, and you have to be a person of integrity, and a word is a word, a bond is a bond, weights and measures have to be accurate. And he was beginning to make them crazy. And they said, Avram, we like you. And we believe that you mean well. But there's one thing you cannot ever change, and that's human nature. People are rapacious, they're greedy, they take when nobody's looking for sure, and even sometimes when they are looking. So don't tell me that believing something is going to change human nature, because that does not happen. And Avram says, absolutely. Look at me. So they said, you? So there's one Avram in the world. Even Hashem says, Echad Hoya Avram. So there's one Avram. But that doesn't mean that the rest of the world is going to be like you just because you want them to be. And this was a dialogue that was going on back and forth. And Avram Avinu was insisting, no, it can be done. Now all of a sudden, who is exhibit number one? Avram doesn't prove anything. But he has a Talmud. And he's not on the level. He's not on the level of Avram, no question about it. And he's not Avram's son either. But he is his Talmud Muvak. Now he says, the fellow that's watching this lecture that Avram Avinu has given, I'm not going to look at what Avram does. I'm going to see what Lot does. Let me take a peek into Lot's life and see if it actually can be done. And all of a sudden he sees, we caught him. When nobody's looking, just like we thought. They don't muzzle the animals, they graze in other people's fields, and they have themselves a good time at the other one's expense, and they steal his hay, his grass. Come back to Avram Avinu. Avram, we told you it can't be done. How many years is this man Lot, your nephew, with you? Didn't he go with you all from Ur Kasdim to come to Eretz Canaan? That's what it says in Lech Lecha. Vayelechita Lot. And look, when nobody's looking, it's just like we said. There's no such thing as changing human nature. And that's what it is. So what happened? What happened was, Avram says, you're destroying the whole limud of what it means to be erlich, what it means to be a man of integrity because you believe in Hashem. So he sent him away. He had no choice. That's the point. Because exhibit number one was suddenly the biggest chil Hashem that could possibly be. That was the discrepancy. Talmud Muvak of Avram, and look how he behaves. And the conclusion is the world is what it is, and Hashem is irrelevant, Rachmana Litzlan, to say such a thing. And that is the biggest chilul Hashem. That the presence of Hashem and the knowledge of Hashem and being imbued with the study of Hashem, learning Torah whole day, nevertheless cannot succeed in erasing and eradicating the inherent potential for corruption. This is the biggest chilul Hashem that could be. And that's what the Gemara means, Heichidami chilul Hashem. The person has to be a paragon. What's the opposite, of course? Shimon ben Shetach. Why is Shimon ben Shetach the opposite? Because it indicates literally the opposite. What did I tell you over many times already in the name of Rav Steinbrotzel Zichrono Livracha? He said that when Shimon ben Shetach bought the donkey, subsequently he found in the saddle, buried in the saddle, or under the blanket of the donkey, a fortune. And he ferreted out the original owner, a guy, and he gave him back the whole money. And he was so gratified and so relieved because he had no idea and he never would have found it on his own. And here is Shimon ben Shetach handing it to him on a silver platter. And he says in his ecstasy, in his excitement, blessed is the God of Shimon ben Shetach. Brich rachmona eloka de Shimon ben Shetach. Rav Steinbrotzel asked, who gave him back the money? Shimon ben Shetach. Bless Shimon ben Shetach. What is this bringing in? What is that all about? Blessed is Hashem, the God of Shimon ben Shetach. So Rav Steinbrotzel said, he understood that it's not humanly possible to do such a thing. Because it runs counter to every instinct. Nobody will know. Finders keepers, losers weepers. It's even legitimately his, perhaps. And the fact of the matter is that giving that kind of treasure back is almost impossible to do. So how is it that Shimon ben Shetach did it after all? The answer is, when you really have faith, and you really know there's one God, and you really know that He's taking care of you, and you really know, and know, and know, and know, then you can do the impossible, because you've transcended the baseness of your humanity on account of your beliefs, on account of your hashkafas olam, on account of your avodas Hashem. And therefore he said, this man is a man of faith. That's what he understood. This is a man who believes in God. Blessed is the God that has such a general. That's what he said. And that's the nekuda. That is the nekuda of the whole Kiddush Hashem, the exact mirror image of Chilul Hashem. Now let's wrap it all up. Let's bring it back to where we came from. Kanos and Kina. The whole Yesod is discrepancies. The inyan of Kanos is to see that the jarring, the jolt of the absurd when you go when A should be and B happened. That's the point. And the greater the contrast, the greater the conflict between A and B, the greater the vile inside of the person, you know, is reviled, he's frustrated, he's angry, he's hysterical, because the reputation of Hashem is being debased. Kina is exactly the same in that shoyrish ha'inyan of comparison. If I am myself and all I think about is where I am, and I don't have anything to measure myself against, there can never be kina. I could be great, I could be low, I could be successful, I could be hapless, it doesn't make a difference. Whatever I am, I might feel good or bad about myself, but there's no kina, because there's no one to compare yourself to. The more the discrepancy, the greater the kina. If I have a friend who has $10,000 and I have $9,999, there's no kina. There's no kina. But if he has millions and I manage to just scrape together a few dollars, there's kina. And that's, by the way, the inyan of Ayin Hara. The whole concept of Ayin Hara lies in the consciousness of a comparison, of a discrepancy in the comparison. I've never seen anybody who has an Ayin Hara if he's doing much better than the other guy. So it's not just the comparison, it's the discrepancy. He's below and the other one's above. But that's the common denominator. Kanos and Kina are both vehicles of taking someone else into account in making the picture and then seeing the discrepancy and reacting to that discrepancy. Now he continues. V'chein ha'taiva nit'a not'a, because he's speaking Hashem planted, not'a Hashem ba'koved la'avodoso u'lekayim ha'kuf. He says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu put a person's stomach the way it is with an appetite, because otherwise he's going to die. You know, people who have anorexia, they are the strangest anomaly to anybody that's normal. You know why? Because we are fighting our appetites. We are struggling to lose weight. We have such a desire to eat. It's the way it is. And Hashem created us with that desire for positive purpose. But we don't realize there's a positive purpose because we're struggling against and trying to diet and it doesn't go and we're upset. So we're upset that we have that desire and we would prefer not to have that desire. I met somebody who put a band on his stomach. The medically, I mean, you know. I'm not talking about a gargle. So he put a band. They banded his stomach. So I asked him, how does that work? So he explained to me. He says that the stomach fills up, and when it reaches a certain point, the nerve endings at that point are unusually sensitive, and when they feel the fullness of the stomach, the desire to eat ceases. That's what it means, I'm full. Person, you know, achila gasa. I can't eat anymore. I just can't. I'm full. Now, what happens when they band the stomach is that the lower part of the stomach is closed off. So, memela, the amount of food that goes in to reach that point is much less than normal. And he's already full. So he's full with much less food and eventually starts to lose a substantial amount of weight. And he doesn't feel hungry. That's the way he explained it to me, the way you know, I imagine that it's so. But it was, on him, it was eminently successful and life-saving, to be frank with you. Life-saving. But the fact of the matter is that when you look at something like that, you know, you almost wish, wow, I wish I didn't have that nerve. But if a person didn't have that nerve, just like when they wanted to be mevatel the Yetzirah for arayos completely, and the chickens didn't even lay eggs, what's the point of all of that? I mean, so our instincts are there for our self-preservation, for our success. And you see it in anorexia. Anorexia, the person, it's almost like those nerve endings are full all the time. And not only that, there's a perception psychologically of obesity. And they don't want to be obese, they want to be thin. And some people say that the society's emphasis on dieting and thinness also damages their psyche at some point. And they feel that anything they will eat will suddenly make them grotesque. When, of course, that's totally absurd. And not only is it absurd, but they're losing weight to such an extent that they stop some of the bodily functions. You know, by a girl, she could stop her monthly cycle because the body is trying to preserve every bit of it so that the person doesn't die. And these people have to be hospitalized. What's missing? Paseach es yodecho umazvi al chol chai. Isn't that what the pasuk says? No, it's not what the pasuk says. Paseach es yodecho umazvi al chol chai. Ratzon. What's that ratzon at the end of the pasuk? What is that ratzon? It doesn't even fit. Masvi al chol chai. You open up your hand, Hashem, and you satiate every living being. What's wrong with that pasuk? Masvi al chol chai. I tell you, if we wouldn't have the word ratzon, nobody would notice that it's missing. But with ratzon, without ratzon, changes the pshat of the pasuk completely. What he's giving a person is ratzon. And without that ratzon, the person is dead. It's an amazing thing. If it would have been left up to our seichel to eat, we would never eat. But nobody believes that because everybody has such a tremendous appetite. And we're always struggling against that appetite. You want to know something? There was a Yid that was on the west side, Chashev Yid, strong, physically strong, strong personality. Nebuchadnezzar was hit with Yana Machla, and I went to visit him. I'm a Kayin, I very rarely go to the hospital except in cases where it's Pikuach Nefesh, and I feel that maybe my presence makes a difference. Sometimes the presence of a Rav makes a difference because he's a Rav. It's amazing. I had once a Maisa that it's Kedai to repeat. There was a Yid that was already very sick, and he was in intensive care in NYU. And so it's around Rosh Hashanah time. It was a tremendous tzaddik, this Yid. But he was Zabach on his last legs. And he was very devoted family. His wife was always there. They don't like people in the intensive care, Dreng Zacharum. But they allowed him and his wife, and his daughter, and his son. Three people they allowed. It's very unusual. And they sat around the bed, mamish, 24 hours a day. Bekitza, I said to myself, you know, maybe I should go give him a little chizuk. And I think it's very therapeutic. So I came in. Imagine the following scene. He's connected to 20 pipes, monitors, feeding tubes, all kinds of things. He's connected to them all. They're a very sick man. And they're sitting there around the bed, and he's lying there catatonic. He's completely out of it. And they see me, and the mother, in a very Hungarian accent, she says, "The Ruv is due. The rabbi is here. The Ruv is here." And all of a sudden, he jumps up. Kavod HaTorah. Unbelievable. Kavod HaTorah. He jumps up. The Ruv is here. Ein Kleinigkeit. He pulled out every single one of those lines. The place started clanging. You know, when you pull out the line, there's music. Not like this music. Bang, 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 bang. You know, and all those alarms go off. And there were 50 nurses and 25 doctors in 10 seconds. The place was total pandemonium. The Ruv is due. So I go. When I feel, I came to this fellow, and he's lying there, totally wasted. It's a picture that, we all know that picture, Rachmana Litzlon, Bar Minan. Bar Minan. Should never know from it. And he said to me the following, "I always used to say the Perek in Tehillim, but I never understood what it meant. The Pasuk says, 'Kol oichel tesa'ev nafshoi.' He has contempt, ta'eva. Kol oichel tesa'ev nafshoi. He has contempt for all food. Vayagiyu ad sha'arei mavos. It's a simon," he says, "that they arrived at the gates of death." Interesting. My Zayde Zichrono Livracha, Reb Moshe Menachem Spiegel, the Rebbe, he used to tell a story about a Yid who was almost a geisis. He was also at the end of his life, and everybody was gathered around, and he would ask for his pouch of money, his money pouch. And he would take the money pouch and start fingering the coins. Start fingering the coins, then he puts the money back in the pouch and gives it back. So he says to them, "You're wondering what I'm doing?" I said, "I'm trying to discover if I'm still alive. If I have an appetite for the money, it's a simon that I'm still alive." An amazing thing. There's a certain inyan for ratzain, for taiva, that means that the person is alive. And this is what he's saying. But we don't fully appreciate it. But tzadik oichel l'soiva nafshe yachsiv ki sa'ava nafshecha ki lule ha'taiva yomus ha'adam. This is in the 1200s he's talking. Ki lule ha'taiva yomus ha'adam. V'lochein kishayechla zeh ha'kolach. If a person chas v'sholom loses his appetite, his ratzain, Sarich levakish le refuah kamoishu berefuahs lechazik taivus amaychol v'zuhi avodas Hashem ki loy hamesim yahaluka. Person has to have an instinct to live, because when we live, we can serve Hakadosh Baruch Hu kol zman. The licht of lebrent is nochdot zeit. And that's what he says. Kamoishu amach iskiyo ki loy shoyel toydu chamavus yahalucha chay 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 hu yoducha kamoini chay chay hu yoducha. Used to be a chassidim that used to dance all day long. Chai, chai, hu yaducha. The living give praise to Hashem. Lo yameisim yalu kov lo kol yodei duma. Ki biyos adam, ukmosh amach iskiyo, ki biyos adam bari v'chazak yochal avid Hashem, v'mucholish v'tashkoyach eni yochal avdai. Kmosh amruzal, babi rabdi yosef panisa, right? So he says, a person who sits in tainis is not doing a good thing. Because let a dog eat his meal. You know, it's a very negative comment. A Talmud Chacham should not sit betainus. Why not? Because tainus inherently is a negative thing. It weakens you, and it disables you. And a person needs to be strong and healthy to be able to serve Hashem properly. The avoda of a yid is a tremendously strenuous activity. Batoira ata omel. Go to the mikveh 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. It's nishpasha. So you need a lot of kayach. And you're not allowed to do anything that undermines that kayach. V'nikra ha-nozir chotei. From Rabbi Yerushalmi, they had to tell the Nazir, Lo Dayecha Masha Asra Torah. It's not enough what the Torah asks it, you have to increase the Isurim. He said, no. From Akos of Tzaddik, Eichel L'Seiva Nafshai. From Ruzal, Asid Adam Litin Adin, Al Masharo, Einov Loinene Mimenu. Beheter, of course. So, Omar Shloima Smach Bocha Bial Dusecha. Right? V'halach kloima al mitzua v'loitar b'hamois reis. V'halach b'tavis v'becha means measure your tivus, but doesn't say ignore your tivus, or reduce your tivus, or eliminate your tivus, because you have to have those tivus. Otherwise, the person is dead. And then he writes, v'chein tivus ha-mishgol hi me'avodas Hashem, v'chein bo refuz gam laze l'piri of rivya l'kiyum amin. He says that people have to procreate, they have to reproduce, and if a person doesn't have that desire, like a Maisa when they tried to destroy the Yetzer Hara for Arayas, you cannot live. So he's telling you that Taiva is a positive force. What about Kavod? Now, that's the hardest one of them all. What about Kavod? So he writes, and it's interesting, he speaks about kavod a great deal. It goes on for 2 pages, kavod. V'chein ha-kavod not ha-shem b'leiv l'guras liboy b'dak ha-shem she'iskabed v'asiyas ha-mitzvahs l'yu mizalzlin b'einov. Very interesting. He says, you have a whole world out there, and they're watching you. And people don't like to do things that are uncomfortably strange, because they don't like to look silly in the eyes of those detractors who are watching them. So you need a sense of your geus. Now, for example, let's say somebody is extremely successful and he has underlings and the underlings snicker. It doesn't bother him a bit because he's not geus them. Kavod gives the person that sense of authority which only vanity can do. But this particular level of kavod is, of course, in the avodah of Hashem. So a person, for example, he says, should not be afraid to go out in talis and tefillin. People will mock him. What a strange getup. Of course, today, there's no such thing. When half of your hair is green and the other half is red, and there's rings coming out of every corner of your body, there's no such thing as being peculiar. So if you go out in talis and tefillin, you know, marash. I remember once, the only cartoon that I remember, but I remember once there was a cartoon, believe it or not, in the Yiddish paper, the Tog Morgen Journal. And the cartoon was one scene, one picture, with a caption underneath. There's two Yidden from the Bronx, like, you know, dressed like, you know, like business people. And there's a chassid sitting there, in the full regalia of the chassid, and on, holding on to the pole was an Indian in their sari and a black man from Africa, and I think it's called the daishiki, whatever it is. But anyhow, each one had his getup. And the two fellows sitting in the seat, looking at the chassid, say, why does he always have to look different? It's mayridik. That's what he says you need kavod for. You shouldn't be geiris what the other person thinks about you when you're in Oyvid Hashem. Yelech b'tzisisa, he should go with his tzitzis. V'yelech b'lulav l'beis haknesses. V'lo yomer es bazabaza. And he shouldn't think that it's a bizayim, because who does things like that? Hu sha'amar David unekaloisi oid mizois. That this is a very interesting thing that he brings this pasuk. And I might want to suggest that it's not necessarily a raya. And let me explain to you why. But he's not bringing it as a raya in that sense anyhow. He just wants to bring the general concept. So, and then we'll finish, stop there, and we'll continue Bezus Hashem next time. David HaMelech is bringing back the Aron from the Plishtim, correct? And it was after the Plishtim they put the Aron in the house of Oved Edom Hagiti, and then they brought it to its proper resting place. In that trip, there was a tremendous joy, an ecstasy that engulfed everybody, and whoever was with the Aron was dancing and singing, including David Melech Yisrael. Michal Bashol looks out the window, and she's used to a king of great stature, not only great stature, he was physically, Shaul was Mishichmoy Vamalo Gavoya, he was huge, he was a giant, and eminently impressive. And he always went with his big day Malchus, and no one ever saw him any different. And there was a tremendous appreciation of Malchus wherever he went. So Michal is used to that and expects that of David, her husband. And here he is dressed not only in ordinary clothes, but even less than that. But David chogo eifed bud. He was dressed in the most simple garment that allowed him to dance freely. And when he danced, he would reveal his feet. And she was hysterical. She says, "Ka'achad ha'reikim, you're like one of the wastrels. You're like one of the street people." So he answered her, "Unekalosi od mizos v'hayisi shofel be'enai. I wish I was even less than this. And in my own eyes, I should feel that way." What David HaMelech meant was, I may behave this way, and I may want to behave this way, and I may be successful in behaving this way, but in my heart of hearts, I know that it's the Melech that's dancing. And I wish that I was so successful that I wouldn't even know that it's the Melech is dancing. Why? Because it's Lifnei Hashem. In the presence of the Aron, there is no Melech. And that, by the way, was a machlokus between Michal Bashol and David HaMelech. It wasn't stam that she didn't like his posture, and she didn't like his exposing himself, and she didn't like that he was reducing himself and debasing himself. And he says, "No, you're totally wrong. You don't understand. This is something special. This is different. We're Lifnei Hashem. This isn't dancing in the royal court." So that makes Michal sound like, you know, she doesn't chap the inyan at all, and she doesn't have an appreciation of the Aron. Bris Hashem, that's certainly not possible. Now the Pshat is there was a machloikas over here. Michal said that the Kvod Hashchina is when the Melech dances. And the way you're dancing, the Melech isn't dancing. Because you're not dressed like a Melech and you're not acting like a Melech. And David HaMelech says, you don't understand, in the presence of Hashem there is no Melech except for one Melech. That was the machloikas. Is it Kvod HaMalchus for the Melech? Michal never suggested that you have to prove Kvod HaMalchus. Some people might think that. Some people may say, Malchus is always to be protected. I think no. I think that her argument wasn't that Lifnei Hashem, you can ignore the Ribbono Shel Olam if you have to protect your Malchus. On the contrary, it's the Kvod Shamayim that even the Melech is dancing. So when the Melech reduces himself and he's no longer seen as the Melech, then that element in the Kvod Shamayim is missing. And David said, you may be right in theory, but the Metzius is that there is no such thing as a Melech in the presence of Hashem. So that idea of the Kalosi Od Mizos, I don't think it has really much to do with this inyan of Kinetai V'Kovod Metzius and Sodom, but they're also positive values. Because here we're talking about how you appear to the Hamon Am, or how do you appear to the world at large. And this issue was a question of reducing the Malchus, or whether you are Mechuyev to reduce the Malchus. That was a different issue entirely. But what he's using it for is simply to say that when David HaMelech said, in response, so he said, I would make myself even more kal. And that, he says, is a lashon of trivializing yourself, is a busha. Why doesn't he feel busha? The Teretz is because his Kvod Shamayim is so great that he doesn't see that other people are looking at him. That's irrelevant to him. That's the point. So the Nekuda here, that Kavod is also something that you have to feel as a positive derech in Avodas Hashem, and that's where he quotes our Pasuk. V'yiskaved v'yizgoya v'rishayim v'lo yokel v'einayim. V'yinak silsul ba'atzmoy l'chvoy t'ayrosoy t'chsiv salsalo usroi mamcha. That's our pasuk in Mishlei. U'kumo she'yiziru zal l'talmid chocham. A talmid chocham is not allowed to wear tatters, and a talmid chocham is not allowed to have dirty begadim, and if he has a revav bevigdai, if he has sometimes there's a stain, or sometimes the thread unravels, and you know the material falls apart. He's not allowed to go out with that. Why not? Because you have to show kavod atayra. Kavod atayra means you're a sara atayra. Sara atayra is not a time to play anivus, because you so the kavod comes from a feeling of dignity that allows you to be sensitive to these inyonim. Now, one would think if kavod is motzis adam and ha'olam, then either a person should have no sensitivity for this at all. So he says, no, that's not right. Because when it comes to be the Eved Hashem that you're supposed to be, there's a certain standard that you have to uphold. So these two points that he made, number one about kavod, number one not to be embarrassed and to do what you have to do in Avodas Hashem, is kavod. Very interesting, by the way. Just want to be Messiah with an observation. You know, there was Nevardik and there was Slabodka. And Nevardik and Slabodka had very strong emphasis on where they are in Olam Hazeh, both of them. They understood Olam Hazeh very well. And the Vardik basically wanted to break the busha in an interesting way. And the Nevardika Derech is exemplified by the suggestion that they used to tell their Talmidim that they should go into a grocery store, for example, and ask for hardware, which no grocery store sold. The guy sold milk and eggs. Or go into a hardware store and ask for milk and eggs. And what would happen, of course? The person behind the counter would start laughing at you. You know, like, what planet are you from? And start guffawing, you know. And that is supposed to not affect me at all. Interesting. And in fact, one of the stories about either the altar of Nevardik or somebody from that cheder was that he was resting and it looked like he was sleeping on the train. And somebody took a match and gave him a hot foot. You know, they lit the match, and you know, it went closer and closer to his leg, and all of a sudden he jumped. So that's what normally happens. So they say that the person next to him heard when he realized what was happening to him, nach abissel, just a little more. I want a little more bizyonis. Go to Slabodka. Everybody's wearing spats. You know what spats are? There's a certain kind of pants that, you know, goes underneath the sock. And the shoes. Everybody has yellow shoes. Of course, today yellow shoes. You know, well, today you can do anything you want, like I said before. But there was a point yesterday, you know, not today, but yesterday, that yellow shoes, you know. Who wears yellow shoes? But in those days, that was a zach. And it showed. And they were very spiffy. And not only that, but many of them did not allow their Talmidim to grow beards. You got to look modern and sophisticated. What is going on over here? And you're talking about tzaddikei olam mamish. You know, this is not, you know. What is the pshat? Torah was in the garbage can, you should forgive me. And the girls didn't even want to marry a ben Torah. They wanted somebody sophisticated and capable of making a significant parnasa, and somebody that was in this world. And the girls were studying all kinds of languages and learning how to play the piano, and they were not interested in somebody that knows the Rambam and the Rashba. And they wanted to elevate the sense of the Talmud Chacham in his own eyes so that he should be able to resist that constant bankfetcher, you're nothing, you're a parasite. You're worthless. That's what they kept hearing. And so many people left because of that. So many people never entered the yeshiva because of that. Some people left Yiddishkeit because of that. So they had to ennoble them. So how do you ennoble a person? So, Mesilas Yesharim doesn't always do it. Doesn't always do the trick. Nice shoes. Nice clothing. You fix yourself in front of the mirror. It's pile ploy. You'd be amazed what that does to the person's sense of self. And they felt that that's critical. Eis lasos l'Hashem eferu torasach. And that is the kavod that he's really talking about, taken to an extreme. But the Nevardic approach, he also includes. But it's very interesting, because he has two kavods. He has the kavod of not fearing and being concerned, because inherently you know that you're better than them, and therefore don't be upset or nervous if they mock you or scoff at you when you go out into the street, right? But at the same time, he has the other kavod, which is nice clothes, dignified, malchustic, because then you feel the malchus that is your clothes.